O God, do not allow to remain on this earth even one disbeliever. As in one case, in another place, we read something similar regarding the prophet Moses. He cursed the Pharaoh, the hosts of the Pharaoh, the followers of the Pharaoh. He said, "O God, destroy their wealth, and because of their sins, make their hearts hard, harden their hearts, and in such a way that they never believe, and they become afflicted with a painful punishment." This is in Surah Yunus, verse 88. Also, the Prophet Shu'aib, alayhi salam, he cursed his nation. In Surah A'raf, verse 89, we read the following that has been related from him. He says, "I only rely and trust in God, my Lord." And then he asks God, he says, "O God, judge between me and my nation truthfully, and you are the best of judges." Right, so these are all indications that yes, this was a conduct of the Prophet, albeit after they lost hope in, certain people ever believing in them and believing in and monotheism and believing in God and adhering to righteousness. Once they lost hope, they would curse their nation. But before that, you know, it wasn't that the prophets would just automatically begin to curse, the disbelievers. That's definitely not one of the conducts of the prophets and the men of God. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at whether the cursing of the disbelievers was a conduct of the prophets or not. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Al Jazeera has said it has filed a lawsuit at the International Criminal Court against Israeli regime forces over the killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghele, who was shot during an Israeli raid in West Bank in May. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truth Out wrote in this regard, following an investigation that Al Jazeera said uncovered new evidence regarding that the fatal shooting of Palestinian-American journalist Shirin Abu Aghele in May, the International News Network said recently that it has filed a lawsuit against the Zionist regime military forces at the International Criminal Court, ICC. The network said in a statement, Al Jazeera's legal team has conducted a full and detailed investigation into the case and unearthed new evidence based on several eyewitnesses' accounts. The examination of multiple items of video footage and forensic evidence pertaining to the case. The investigation reportedly showed that Abu Aghele and her colleagues were directly fired at by Israeli occupation forces when they were covering a raid by the forces in Jenin in the occupied West Bank on May 11th. Al Jazeera said the claim by Israeli authorities that Shirin was killed by mistake in an exchange of fire is completely unfounded. The rulings of the International Criminal Court stipulate that those responsible by investigated and held accountable, said Dixon, otherwise They bear the same responsibility as if they were the ones who opened fire. The legal filing comes weeks after the Zionist regime officials said they would not cooperate with an FBI investigation into the death of Abu Akleh, who was wearing a vest and helmets identifying her as a member of the press when she was shot in the head. The Zionist regime has said it conducted an investigation which found the origin of the bullet that killed the veteran Al Jazeera journalist could not be determined because it was too damaged, suggesting that Palestinian forces could have fired the bullet. Other investigations, including a U.S.-led forensic and ballistic probe and one by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, found that the Zionist regime forces may have unintentionally fired the weapon that killed Abu Akleh, while an independent investigation by Forensic Architecture in the UK and the Palestinian human rights group Al-Haq concluded that the Zionist regime forces had intentionally killed the journalist. Dixon said the ICC should consider the lawsuit in the context of a wider attack on Al Jazeera and journalists in Palestine, referring to the bombing of a building that housed Associated Press and Al Jazeera offices in May 2021. Dixon said it's not a single incident, it's a killing that is part of a wider pattern that the prosecution should be investigating to identify those who are responsible for the killing and to bring charges against them. The website of Al Jazeera English also wrote in this regard a dossier submitted by Al Jazeera to the International Criminal Court, ICC, with a formal request to investigate the killing of veteran television correspondent Shirin Abu Akleh shows how her death unfolded and how it has had a chilling effect among Palestinian journalists, a lawyer for the Global TV Network says. Abu Akleh, a Palestinian-American correspondent with Al Jazeera for 25 years, was killed by Israeli regime forces on May 11th on a road in Jenin in the northern occupied West Bank. The request received by the court includes statements from witnesses and their video footage, including new unseen footage, lawyer Rodney Dixon, KC, said. The chronology produced from the evidence shows the only firing that was going on when Abu Akleh and her colleagues were on the road was firing at the journalist, Dixon explained. Abu Akleh and her colleagues at the time were wearing protective helmets and jackets emblazoned with press. The evidence produced Al Jazeera counters claims by Israeli regime authorities that Abu Akleh was killed in a crossfire. In September, it said there was a high probability an Israeli regime troop accidentally hit the journalist, but that it would not launch a criminal investigation. The submission also includes cases of other Palestinian journalists who have been targeted by Israeli regime authorities, including the bombing of Al Jazeera's Gaza office in 2021. Dixon, who investigated the killing of Abu Akleh, compiled the evidence and submitted it to the ICC on behalf of Al Jazeera. That's all to show that this has been going on for some time and that Al Jazeera has been targeted generally. Another witness statement that the dossier includes is from Al Jazeera journalist Givara Buderi. In 2021, Israeli regime police arrested and assaulted Buderi and destroyed the equipment of Al Jazeera cameraman Nabil Mazavi. They were covering a sit-in in the occupied East Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah to mark the 54th anniversary of the Nakba, the event in 1967 when the Zionist regime seized what remained of the Palestinian homeland. Dixon said She was detained and beaten and tortured on the 5th of June 2021, he said. What we have emphasized in this submission is that those who were interrogating her kept saying that this is because you are with Al Jazeera. Witness testimonies in the dossier point to fear among journalists and how such attacks are affecting Palestinian journalists' ability to work on the ground, Dixon said. Al Jazeera journalists who were interviewed highlight how Abu Aghla's killing has had a chilling effect and has created concerns about how to go about their work safely. The evidence shows that Shireen was such a cautious journalist, always going to every measure to protect herself and others, Dixon said, adding, and on the day they had taken all those measures, and the witnesses have consistently said that this was a shock, that they were suddenly fired on directly. Previously explained, there was an unwritten code under which the Zionist regime forces would tell journalists they were not welcome in an area or shoot tear gas or even warning shots. The fact Abu Aghla's killing happened in a situation where they did not expect it at all has made people realize that they could be next, Dixon said. The lawyer added, so is completely new ground where they are deeply concerned there are no boundaries. Wherever they go now, they could be fired at because this has happened once and there have been no consequences.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kHz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Believing in God. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of believing in God in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, when we believe in God or Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we need to have the true and the right belief in God. We see in our life that sometimes there are some evils that are happening in our life, or we see that which we know as an evil, but actually it is not an evil. So when we talk about the philosophy or the logic of evil, we should remember that evil is in relation to something, whereas by itself, its existence is not an evil. For example, there is a sickness which is not curable. Is that good or is that bad? We think it's an evil thing. We think it's a bad thing. Maybe it's a good thing for the person who got that disease, and through this disease, he's living less life, and he's less in pain. The other example is the flood, or maybe the earthquake that we see, or maybe the poison that some animals have. Sometimes we think these are evils, but we are unaware of their role in this nature. If we are unaware of their role in this nature, therefore we find them as a danger, and we are cautionate towards them. For example, we don't know about these myths that we have, or the made stories, the folks that are made about the aliens in the universe. So if aliens are bad, how many cartoons or movies are made on the aliens? But if they exist, they have their own role in the universe. We human beings have our own role in this world, that we need to keep this nature and we need to secure this. Unfortunately, we are damaging the ozone layer because of pollution, and it shows that we are not performing our duty and job towards this nature, and therefore we can also become an evil for the nature. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of believing in God in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that Allah has created everything. But when we talk about the evil, we sometimes say that Allah has created the evil as well. Well, if evil is something on its own, it has its own existence, then obviously we need to look at the role of that specific thing in the nature, in this world, in this universe. And we find that on its own, it is a good thing. For example, earthquake is good for the earth. It's good for the nature. But yes, for public, for people, for some places where we live, maybe some areas which are on the scale or the point of the earthquake, yes, it is bad for them. Therefore, they consider an earthquake as an evil. Similarly, it is the case with the floods. It is the case with the other things that are happening, and maybe snow falling in some areas. It's more than what it should be. But overall, when we look at the consequences, when we look at the effects of that, we find out that no, it was a great thing that happened. For example, the hurricanes, they hit different parts of the world. We think because we are living beyond our capacity, we have expanded to the whole world, and we wherever we like the place, wherever we saw that it's a good resort or it's a good area or it's a beautiful place, let's make houses, increase the population to these areas, so we are not limited to our limits. And therefore, when such things happens, and we think these are, for example, the hurricanes or other things, these are evil for us, whereas they are good for the nature. Therefore, when we are believing in God, we must trust God. We must believe that everything that is happening, it is because of cause and effect. And number three is, everything that is happening is for our goodness, even if it's a trial or if it's something which is benefiting us. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
At the height of the Cold War, the CIA launches a highly classified, top-secret research program into the covert use of biological and chemical agents. In simulated attacks on enemy populations, entire cities throughout America are contaminated with bacteria, exposing millions of Americans to germ warfare. But the real focus of the research is on mastering the art of mind control. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. LSD had become one of the CIA's key interests for its brain warfare program. As the agency theorized, it could be useful in interrogations. Mind control experiments generally centered around behavior modification via electroshock therapy, hypnosis, polygraphs, radiation, and a variety of drugs, toxins, and chemicals. Now, these experiments relied on a range of test subjects, some who freely volunteered, some who volunteered under coercion, and some who had absolutely no idea that they're involved in a sweeping defense research program. And what was the extent of these brainwashing experiments? How did the CIA use unconsenting people as guinea pigs in thousands of different experiments? Join us on Aperture for your answers on CIA covert experiments.
August 16th, 1951. Madness spreads through the village of Pont-Saint-Esprit in the Gard region in France. Dozens of villagers have been victim of these bouts of madness. The press describes men terrorized by snakes swirling in their stomachs. A doctor recounts the evening of the 25th of August, where dozens of locals were seized by convulsions, like in a night of the apocalypse. Reports from the victims are terrifying. In Pont-Saint-Esprit, they call it the cursed bread drama, because all of those who fell ill ate the bread from the Brion bakery. It's the first time in France that a whole village has gone mad. It made headlines in the press, who wondered what could have caused this collective hallucination. In Pont-Saint-Esprit, the locals panic, and nobody will touch the bread. The hearses quickly arrive in the village. In total, 7 deaths, 300 people poisoned, and around 50 admitted to psychiatric wards. The first dead were buried. The investigators initially thought it was a return of St. Anthony's fire, a disease that killed many thousands in the Middle Ages, caused by a parasitic ergo fungus that attacks cereals. The baker was accused of poisoning, then the miller. Arrested and incarcerated, they were released after several months. They say that their confessions were made under duress, and above all, the evidence proved their innocence. It was then thought to be water poisoning, mercury, fertilizers, or a nearby gas factory. But the evidence disapproved these theories one by one. Since then, in Pont-Saint-Esprit, more far-fetched theories have surfaced. Nothing is clear, and for decades the incident goes unexplained. But against all expectations, 60 years later, a new theory is proposed. Not from France, but from the United States. An American researcher in the Secret Services, Hank Albarelli, is investigating the suspicious death of a biochemist from the CIA, Frank Olson. A specialist in chemical weapons, he carried out experiments on hard drugs like LSD. He was also in France a few months before the Pont-Saint-Esprit incident. Afterwards, he kept sinking into depression, telling his wife that he'd made a terrible mistake. Hank Albarelli then made the link with the Pont-Saint-Esprit incident. Could it have been the CIA and the American Army spraying LSD onto the bread?
I have no doubt at all that Pont-Saint-Esprit was a U.S. Army covert experiment. Initially, I had doubts, and I think initially my doubts were motivated by wishful thinking on my part, where I didn't want it to be an experiment. It was hard to fathom the government doing that. Although at the same time, there were a number of research tracks that were being conducted for the book at the same time. So my being naive about what the government and the U.S. Army was capable of doing was the threshold for that was dwindling.
Is it possible that the Americans drugged an entire village in an ally country, causing, no doubt accidentally, the death of 7 people? Improbable. However, to understand what happened in Pont-Saint-Esprit, we need to look back at the end of the Second World War, when the level of atrocities committed by the Nazis was discovered in the camps. Notably, horrific experiments carried out on thousands of prisoners by chemists or doctors. Men lacerated, poisoned, burnt alive, exposed to radiation. The Allies hunted the war criminals from Hitler's regime. In 1946 in Nuremberg, the doctors are put on trial. 22 men and one woman who experimented on human beings, who they transformed into lab rats, stand accused. The trial sets a precedent. 7 of the accused are sentenced to death, 11 given prison sentences, and 5 are acquitted. As a result, the Americans draft the Nuremberg Code, a model which gives strict rules for experimenting on humans, notably the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. The experiment must be designed to avoid all unnecessary suffering, physical and mental harm. With the Nuremberg trial barely over, the winners remain cynical. The American Secret Service begins Operation Paperclip. Nearly 1,500 German scientists, including war criminals, are expatriated to America. They are offered a new life in exchange for their knowledge and cooperation.
It was a very serious game of propaganda that we were playing. It was almost a show trial. We're putting the Nazis on trial, but in fact, behind the curtain, we're doing some very nasty things ourselves to basically incarcerated people, poor people, individuals who at the time were called feeble-minded and locked up in institutions. And if you were in one of those institutions, whether you were indigent or an unwed mother or had some sort of mental incapacity, there's a good chance that you may have been incorporated in some sort of medical study, possibly for the government or not, where you would have been used and abused.
Assisted by the German scientists, the Americans begin pursuing their goal of the ultimate weapon, and everything is allowed in the name of the Cold War. On the one side was the Army, whose priority is to win the nuclear arms race. At the time, to test the effects of radiation on a large scale, they used their own soldiers, who were docile and disciplined. Between 1946 and 1962, between 250,000 and 500,000 men were exposed to radiation on Bikini Atoll or in the Nevada desert. They were exposed with no protection, unaware of the risks involved. And afterwards, the radiated particles were cleaned up with brooms.
How about radiation? You think there's much danger from radiation?
Well, radiation is the least of the worries that the men are thinking about.
I think most people thought that radiation was the greatest danger, didn't they? Where did they learn different?
Well, prior to our instructions here, we received a very thorough briefing before we even came this close to contact with it.
On the other side was the CIA, who was above all interested in psychological manipulation. Their goal was to create an infallible truth serum, wipe memories, turn humans into robots, and program them to kill. Conveniently, in 1948, a researcher in the Sandoz laboratories, Albert Hoffman, discovers a molecule that ignites the Secret Service, lysergic acid diethylamide, or LSD. It's derived from the same rye fungus, long held responsible for the incident at Pont Saint-Esprit. It was believed that the hallucinogenic properties of this drug were key to psychological manipulation. Fearing that the Russians would get their hands on Sandoz's samples, the Americans bought all of their stock. The discovery of LSD was a godsend for the Army, who on the brink of nuclear weapons were looking for a weapon that could defeat an enemy without firing any weapons. The man who was head of this program longest was James Ketchum, shown here in uniform. He was a psychiatrist who was working for the military. As a patriot, he was prepared to push the boundaries in his research. He tested around 30 drugs, but especially LSD and the dangerous benzylate. He treated 7,000 soldiers, hundreds of whom later sued the Army because of the side effects that they still experience and attribute to these drugs. However, when questioned, James Ketchum sees things differently.
I think they were very patriotic. They've not been given credit. They've been called innocent guinea pigs, which they certainly were not. They knew what they were doing, and we told them as much as we could about it. We had to limit the names of the drugs because some of them were artificially made. And if we were to give out the name, of course, that would also reveal the structure, and that we were afraid the Russians would get that. They were apparently following our work. We thought they were ahead of us, but actually they weren't. And so they were watching what we did to see what they could learn and use, and they developed a similar drug later themselves.
In parallel with the Army, the CIA was also developing its own programs, codenamed Bluebird, Artichoke, and later MK Ultra.
But to carry out these programs on a large scale, they needed funds. In 1950, the Korean War gave them the ideal pretext. Some American soldiers were captured. During their detention, pilots admitted having dropped chemical weapons onto Korea, which was forbidden. The Americans claimed this was due to psychological manipulation, and the CIA took advantage of this godsend to obtain budgets that allowed them to work on brainwashing.
During the Korean War, the American pilots who were captured started making apparently false confessions of germ warfare. The first question is, was it really false confessions? But then when they were brought back to the United States, the military and the military psychiatrists studied them and decided that there was mind control operations being run against Americans. So for defensive purposes, we had to study this, figure it out, therefore we created MKUltra. Before MKUltra was Bluebird and Artichoke. So the whole rationale is it's defensive. It's because of what the communists are doing. Problem is, the Korean War started in June 1950, and Bluebird was signed into operation by the head of the CIA in April 1950.
In the Edgewood camp where James Ketchum worked, soldiers are called upon more and more. They think they're testing gas masks. In reality, the canisters are filled with a toxic chemical.
They were testing a whole assortment of different hallucinogens like LSD and marijuana and things like that. And they explored other drugs, very high levels of atropine, scopolamine, benzolates, very powerful. And a lot of these soldiers ended up incapacitated. It took them a long time to recover. And while they're in recovery, the doctors cannot do any more experiments because it's basically a very small base and testing operation. In other words, they needed a new site.
It's in this context of the Cold War and secret agents that on the 16th of August, 1951, the tragedy at Pont Saint-Esprit unfolded. France was suffering economically, and the Americans distrusted this ally they couldn't control. The village was under the control of socialists at the time. In the eyes of America, they were Reds, the epitome of the Soviet danger. But the mayor, Roger Castillon, doesn't believe in a foreign conspiracy. Yet American experts like Colin Ross are much more down to earth.
Obviously, that compound didn't just come in the rain, or just wasn't sitting around naturally. It was obviously organized, controlled, distributed. So whether it was actually LSD or some other compound doesn't make that much difference. Pont Saint-Esprit is actually not just this happened once in the world in a village in France. It's consistent with all the other experiments on the public that have done in the United States and done for a documented fact.
To achieve their goals, would the Americans be prepared to use a whole village as a laboratory? After all, these are civilians, not trained soldiers. However, in September 1950, nearly 1 year before Pont Saint-Esprit, this is exactly what they did, and in their own country. Off the coast of San Francisco, the American Marines were carrying out military maneuvers. A ship approached the coast and bombarded the city with a bacteria causing nucosomia, Serratia marcescens. The military were testing the effects of spraying this through the air. This classified secret defense map shows the scale of the targeted area. At least 11 people were hospitalized, one of whom died of pneumonia. The villagers wonder why a supposedly festive drug that is loved by hippies would have had such terrifying effects at Pont Saint-Esprit. James Ketchum, the military psychiatrist who specialized in LSD, a little reluctantly, admits that the drug is scary for those who take it unknowingly.
Some individuals could have a bad trip if someone gave them LSD and didn't tell them about it. That's very anxiety producing. or if they were inexperienced and not particularly well balanced themselves, took a fairly large dose of LSD, they could have a bad trip. How would you feel if you had a cup of coffee and started to see things going like this or like this, brilliant colors appear on the ceiling, or suddenly you felt you're out of your body and looking down on yourself? These are all things that can happen with LSD.
But can these effects have a delayed onset? In Pont Saint-Esprit, the older generation remember the night of the apocalypse, where dozens of men went mad and were sectioned in a psychiatric unit because of terrifying visions. This night took place more than 2 weeks after the cursed bread was consumed. But again, James Ketchum admits that it's possible.
Some individuals had flashbacks later in which they would go into a situation where they had been when they were taking LSD and have a flood of the same emotions and some of them anxiety-producing.
In 1951, French investigators also consider LSD and call upon Albert Hoffman, inventor of the drug. On the spot, he tells the investigators that he has no doubt that the hallucinations were due to LSD. But after returning to Switzerland, he backtracks, claiming he was mistaken. The French want explanations, but public health documents from 1951 show that the expert became suddenly unreachable. We are sorry that the eminent professor has not been able to get back in touch with us.
I would think if the Sandoz scientists are saying it doesn't seem to be LSD, they're just trying to cover up the fact that it's 100% for sure that LSD must have come from Sandoz, because they were the only suppliers. It's nothing more than a cover-up.
After months of inquiry, the French investigators were so disoriented by the number of fruitless leads that the incident at Pont Saint-Esprit falls victim to its own mystery. During this time, the experiments continued in the United States, and they reached a level never seen before in any country, including the Soviet bloc.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we have again, alhamdulillah, some of the students of Sevier International School with us in this session. And before we start the class, let me say hello to each of them. Salam, Hussein Ruhullah, and how are you?
Salam alaikum, sir.
Salam, salam.
I'm fine, how are you?
Oh, thank you. Alhamdulillah, I'm good. Welcome. And Hassan Nasrullah, how are you doing?
Salam alaikum, sir.
Salaamu alaikum.
I'm fine, sir.
Okay.
How are you?
That's great. Thank you so much. Welcome. So, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we really recommend you stay with us till the end of the session. Inshallah, you will benefit and we all will benefit from the verses of the Quran-i-Kareem. So, Brother Hassan and Hussein, today, inshallah, we'll be working on Ayah 58 of Surah Al-Baqarah. And I really want everyone who are listening to us, brothers and sisters, grab your Quran and go to Surah Al-Baqarah, Ayah 58. Inshallah, we'll be working on this ayah. And make sure you stay with us till the end of this session. Before we start, let's listen to this ayah once, everyone. Thank you so much. Alhamdulillah, nice recitation. I loved it. How about you, brothers?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. So now I will be reciting and make sure you listen and repeat after me. All right? And brothers and sisters who are listening, please listen, okay? And repeat after us. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
وَإِذْ قُلْنَا ادْخُلُوا هَٰذِهِ الْقَرْيَةَ فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا حَيْثُ شِئْتُمْ رَغَدًا
وَإِذْ قُلْنَا ادْخُلُوا هَٰذِهِ الْقَرْيَةَ فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا حَيْثُ شِئْتُمْ رَغَدًا
فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا حَيْثُ شِئْتُمْ رَغَدًا وَادْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا
فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا حَيْثُ شِئْتُمْ رَغَدًا وَادْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا
وَادْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا وَقُولُوا حِطَّةٌ نغفر لكم خطاياكم
وادخلوا الباب سجدا وقولوا حطة نغفر لكم خطاياكم
أحسنتم ما شاء الله وسنزيد المحسنين
وسنزيد المحسنين
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. Thank you, brothers. وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دُخُلُوا هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ That Qariya, when Prophet Musa alayhi salam and his nation, okay, were there, and Allah Almighty were telling them that وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دُخُلُوا When we said, enter this town, that town was Jerusalem, okay? Or Palestine, okay? Jerusalem. And فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا حَيْثُ شَئِتُمْ رَغَدًا And eat thereof freely whensoever you wish. Okay, whatever you want, go and eat, okay? In that قَرْيَة, in that town. وَدْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا And enter the bab, the door, okay? The door of the masjid of Baytul Maqaddas, okay? Baytul Maqaddas, okay? وَدْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا While prostrating. This prostrating here means while you are giving thanks to Allah Almighty. Okay? That has given you a new chapter of life. That has given you like a new like beginning or a new place, okay, to live. وَقُولُوا حِطَّةٌ And say حِطَّة. حِطَّة means forgive us, okay? And make tawbah while you enter. نَغْفِرْ لَكُمْ خَطَايَاكُمْ If you say this, we will forgive you your mistakes, we will forgive your inquiries, okay, and the mistakes. وَسَنَزِيدُ الْمُحْسِنِينَ And soon we will enhance the virtuous, okay? We will extend, for example, or expand the thawab, the rewards of those who are muhsinin, those who are the right doers. One thing here I have to mention, in the next ayah as well we have, Allah Almighty told them to say hitta, right? While prostrating, they have to say hitta. And the next ayah will say, it will read that, unfortunately, they didn't listen to Allah Almighty. They changed the word of hitta to hinta. Hitta to hinta. They said another word, okay? Then Allah Almighty send them azab, okay? Why? Because they are changing the rules of Allah Almighty. Whatever Allah Almighty says to them, they do not listen, they do whatever they want. So of course they deserve punishment.
Let's recite the Quran.
That's my point. The explanation of this ayah, it's too much, okay? We don't want to enter. We really want you to refer to the Tafsir book. Now, the Tajweed rules, which are our main topic, we'll focus on. وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دَخُلُوا وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دَخُلُوا قُلْنَا أَلِفْ مَدْ, right? Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
And then the next word starts with?
وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دَخُلُوا
حَمْزَةُ الْوَسْلِ.
Yes.
The next word starts with حَمْزَةُ الْوَسْلِ. You remember the rule that when we have alif mad, waw mad, or ya mad, simply harful mad, plus hamzatul wasl, do we have to produce the do we have to still prolong the sound of harful mad? Qulna, because we have to skip hamzatul wasl.
Yes.
Qulna dukhulu, is that right?
No.
We have to skip this mad sound.
Yes.
We have to put it like a short a e u sound. Qulna, not na. Qulna dkhulu, right? Qulna dkhulu. Make sure. The rule says this: if we have harful mad plus hamzatul wasl, here, if you want to skip hamzatul wasl, okay, you want to join the words together, so of course you have to skip hamzatul wasl. So in this case, you do not have to prolong the sound of harful mad.
Yes.
Say them with short vowel sound.
Yes.
That's it. That's the rule, okay? And dal has a sukoon on the top. So it means you have to produce a bouncing sound or kind of tickle it, okay? Tickle it, it will jump up, okay? So, وَإِذْ قُلْ نَدْخُلُوا Hassan, read it. وَإِذْ قُلْ نَدْخُلُوا
وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دَخُلُوا
أحسنتم. Now, the word starts with Hamzatul Wasl. If you start with the word Udkhulu, that I said already how to pronounce it, so because the third letter has a Dhamma, the Hamzatul Wasl, if you want to start from this word. So the Hamzatul Wasl will be assigned with
Dhamma.
Udkhulu, right? Udkhulu. But because you join them together, وَإِذْ قُلْنَا with أُدْخُلُوا, so Hamzatul Wasl will be skipped. وَإِذْ قُلْنَا دُخُلُوا هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةَ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةَ فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا نُن ساكن plus ها فَكُلُوا مِنْهَا. What rule is applied? Merge, change, hide, no rule.
No rule.
No rule is applied. Why? No rule is equal to idhar. Idhar is applied. We mean there is no change, there is no hide, there is no merge. So it's called idhar. Because ha is from the throat letters. Minha. Haythu shi'tum ragadan. Ragadan. Nun tanween. Plus, next word starts with waw. Tanween plus waw tells you, to apply the rule?
Tanween plus waw.
Waw is from your malun letters.
You merge.
Yeah, merge them. The rule, idgham. Idgham with ghunna or without ghunna?
With
nasal sound or without?
With.
Ragadan. Read it, Hussein. Ghain is a heavy letter. Ragadaun, two heavy letters. Ra, ga, da. Ragadaun. Do it.
Ragadaun.
Ahsantum. Next, wadkhulu. Hamzatul wasl. Skip it. Dal, qalqala. Bouncing sound. Ragadaun, wadkhulu al-bab. Again, the example of mad letter plus hamzatul wasl we have. Wadkhulu al-bab, right? Hassan, do you see that? Wadkhulu al-baba. Now you have to skip that hamzatul wasl. You have to say wadkhulu al-baba. Now we have u sound. Wadkhulu wa'u mad. Two counts, yeah?
Yes.
U, not u. U. So here, because you have hamzatul wasl and you skip hamzatul wasl, you have to also skip the mad of u sound. Put a dhamma only. Wadkhulu lul, not lul ba. وَدْخُلُوا الْبَابَ سُجَّدًا. If you stop here, سُجَّدًا, تَنْوِين, فَتْحَ will be changed to?
أَلِفْ مَا.
أَلِفْ مَا. سُجَّدًا. Instead of saying سُجَّدًا, سُجَّدًا, سُجَّدًا. وَقُولُوا. If you do not stop, if you continue reading, so, of course, تَنْوِين فَتْحَ plus وَاو, you merge them.
Yes.
سُجَّدًا. Okay, وَقُولُوا حِطَّةٌ, تَنْوِين ضَمَّة plus نُون إِدْغَام, حِطَّةٌ نَغْفِرْ لَكُمْ خَطَايَاكُمْ. The baby jim on the top tells you, you can
stop
or
continue.
Both are allowed.
Yes.
Both are the same. وَسَنَزِيدُ الْمُحْسِنِينَ. That's all in this ayah. So there is no other rules, okay? The important rules we just mentioned. Make sure, inshallah, you practice and also listen again to our today's session if you didn't know any of them. So practice, inshallah, for the explanation. We said we didn't have much time, so you refer to the Tafasir book because there are long explanations. Thank you so much. Stay with us, please, in the coming sessions as well. We'll be here with you, inshallah, at the same time. Once more, I give thanks to IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools Network. Thanks, Hassan and Hussein, for being with us today. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahiri.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil faraja.
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.